Gomenasai, everyone. We had a little accident with the recording this time. I've done my best to save it, but you might notice artifacts and bad sound quality in this episode. You have been warned. But the alternative was to not release it at all. Hopefully, you will cut us some slack this time. You're listening to the All In IT Radio. Join us as we talk about everything related to information technology and some other random stuff as well. Help us try to find how IT relates to each and every one of us and what's really behind the story headlines. We are Swedes and we talk tech. Welcome to All In IT Radio. This is Kenneth talking, and with me, as always, I have...
Henrik. Hello there, my jolly good almighty podcast-producing friend from Gothenburg.
Ah, that sounds terrific. You are in excellent form, aren't you?
As always.
So, what do we talk about today? Let's jump right into the mix.
A few episodes ago, we talked about bookmark keywords in Firefox. You could perhaps explain the... technique behind that?
Yeah, sure. Briefly. I mean, we mentioned it just briefly. We didn't even explain properly what it was.
No.
If I recall, you said that I use it, and that was about it. So I thought we should take a moment or two to actually explain how it works.
Mm?
And you promised... I take notes. And you promised to try it out for a week, at least.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
I have done that. I've tried it out for, well, it must be about 2 months by now.
All right, splendid. And the thing is, when you in Firefox create a bookmark, which, well, it's not different from any other browser, you have an option, and that is to create a key word or a key letter even for that bookmark, if the bookmark in question happens to be a search form.
Yeah.
So you can save search forms that you can access from your address bar in Firefox.
Mm.
The perfect example is the thing I use, which is the letter G for a Google search.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't so exhilarating. In Chrome, if you type anything in the address bar, you immediately do a Google search for that term if it's not a URL, if it isn't an address.
Yeah. Mostly that's the case with, any browser, if you have Google as your main search engine. But it takes a few seconds for it to look up, is this a domain name or what is it? And if it isn't, it returns to your search engine, which mostly is Google.
True, exactly. So you actually save some sort of...
Insignificant seconds,
exactly. But that isn't where these bookmark keywords shine, because Google, well, or whatever search engine we choose to use, we use every day, almost all the time.
Yeah.
But there are other searches that we don't use as often.
Yeah.
I mean, how often do you visit Wikipedia, for example?
Mm. Yeah.
Or how often do you search on something on the Internet Movie Database?
Mm.
I mean, when I watch a movie or a series or something, I constantly turn to the Internet Movie Database to check out what's the name of that actor and where have I seen him before. And to do that, I only pull up a new tab in Firefox. I type in IMDb, and then I enter the name of the series or the movie, whatever. And then I'm right there. Mm-hmm. So it's very fast, it's very efficient. In Sweden, we have something called FASS, F-A-S-S, and that stands for, I don't know, what does that stand for?
I don't even know what FASS is, but...
You don't? It's really a book, a thick book, with the names of all the prescription medicines that are legal to use in Sweden.
FASS.se.
Yeah, exactly, and also the components, the active components in those medicines.
Yeah.
So if you are uncertain if you're pregnant and you want to drive a car and you want to take an aspirin of some sort, you want to check what's in that pill before so that it doesn't affect your child or your
driving
skills.
Yeah.
And that is FASS. Very, very nice service. And it is online and it has a web page and a search form.
Yeah.
So that search form I have saved as a bookmark keyword.
Yeah.
And of course that means that I can just write down in an open empty tab FASS and whatever the pill or drug I'm looking for. Not that I use it that much, but it's there. And honestly, Wikipedia, I can't remember the last time I searched for something on Wikipedia itself. I always use the Google search and add Wikipedia to it. I don't know, how do you do it? How do you search Wikipedia?
Most of the case, Google. Because when I look for something or some article or something of significance, I Google it first. And then I discover, hey, it was a Wikipedia article already written about this. But I don't assume from the beginning that the information is on Wikipedia.
And Wikipedia is almost always one of the first hits.
Yeah.
Generally.
Mm.
All right, interesting. So you've used this now?
Yeah, I've used it for must be 2 months.
All right.
Or something. And the first I added was, well, the same as you, Google, G, the letter G for a Google search. And the next thing I added was Tyda, T-Y-D-A, Swedish page.
What is that?
Swedish page, tyda.se, where you translate from Swedish to English, or English to Swedish, online dictionary.
All right.
And to quickly look up translation of words and such. The third bookmark keyword I added was YouTube search, to quickly find if something is on YouTube. And for that I use YT. That's the main three I use. I added Wikipedia, but I ended up not using it, so I deleted it.
Oh, I feel the same. I'd never used the Wikipedia keyword.
But it's a very convenient way of searching.
It is.
Because in
But you weren't using it when we talked about it last time.
No, I wasn't. Because the most common use, Google, G, wasn't really a problem. Because if I just type anything in, as you said, in the search or the address bar, it takes a few seconds and then it launches my main search engine, which is Google. But when I was wanted to search for something on Tyda or YouTube, I had to go to the URL and then put my search in. So it really made the whole process of looking information up very much easier. But then I have a little question about it. Is bookmark keywords exclusively on Firefox, or is it used in other browsers as well?
Very interesting question. I don't know. Let me fire up Chrome and check. I haven't actually searched for the feature in Chrome. So I don't know, really. Let's see. Here we have Chrome and let's go to Internet Movie Database.com, IMDb. And we have a search field. I can right-click on that, and let's see what options I get. I can add it as a search engine.
Yeah.
All right, that seems to be the same thing. Then you can add a keyword to use for this search engine.
Mm.
All right, add a search engine. Yeah, sure, Chrome has it as well.
Okay.
That was a strange name for it, add as search engine. But sure, all right, it's there.
Because it doesn't feel like a very exclusive feature.
No.
It works like a basic feature, but maybe not that many people know about it. I didn't know about it until 2 months ago.
So when I enter a new tab in Chrome, when I enter IMDb and a space, it actually says, it changes the look of the prompt. It says, search imdb.com and a colon, and then I can enter anything I like. So it's the exact same functionality, so you can use it either on Firefox or on Chrome, doesn't matter. But still, it's a feature that perhaps not many actually use.
Yeah. Even if you don't use your computer that much, as we do, it still can be very useful, because most
Even for ordinary people, you mean?
Yeah. Thank you. Because most of the case when people use the computer, it is to look up news, or it is looking up the address of a person, or the phone number, or similar.
Yeah, that's a good idea, to check for any phone company that is Eniro or Hitta, that is...
Yeah.
The yellow pages or white pages, or, well, the phone book online.
Yeah.
Can you figure out any other uses for this?
Well,
Google has sort of made these functions obsolete in that Google searches everything. So you can just use ordinary Google search and add that domain or add that as a keyword. You just throw in IMDb in an ordinary Google search and you will find the Internet Movie Database response.
Mm. Yeah, because a Google search is a very broad search. If you use Google to search for anything, perhaps you don't know from the beginning what you're looking for. You want to look up what is this. You don't want to look up you don't know beforehand what it is and want to know specific information. Let's say I want to know what a marmot is.
A what?
A marmot.
Oh, all right.
In Swedish, that would be murmeldjur.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So take that.
Why would you want to... all right, never mind.
Just an example. If you want to know what a marmot is, you don't know what a marmot is. You never heard the word before, even. You're probably going to use Google to search for it. And then
IMDb.
No, I wouldn't do that. Then you find some crappy film called The Marmot, and it's takes place out in outer space, and... gene-manipulated marmot is taking over the world.
Sounds like a Norwegian production.
What?
No? All right.
I've never seen any Norwegian productions with marmots in them, so okay.
Right, back to the point.
Yeah. If you type in marmot and search on Google, you probably find a Wikipedia article at first, and then you read it and find out, oh, it's an animal. Okay, yeah. But if you want to find out about exact instructions of how to feed a marmot, or what it eats, or how to live, and specific information like that. And let's say you already beforehand are into animals, you have a lot of pets or something, you probably already have found a specific website for it. And in that case, they often have a search form on their website to find all the relevant information. In that kind of situation, it would be... it's really convenient to have a customized search for a specific area and not search all the internets at once for the information, because then you have to crawl through a lot of unnecessary information. Do you see what I mean? The marmot example wasn't brilliant, I know, but I took something out of the blue.
I'm looking in, I have a special folder where I collect all these keyword searches in Firefox, and I have, I don't know how many, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 different ones, actually. And it's IMDb, it's Wikipedia, it's PHP.net, it's FUS, it's Google, as I mentioned, it's SAOL.
Yeah.
The Swedish Academy word list to check spellings of words or the history of a word. I have DuckDuckGo, which is another search engine.
Yeah. We've talked about that, haven't we?
Have we spoken about DuckDuckGo?
I think we have in some episode. I think I mentioned I started using it but stopped again or something like that.
Oh, we might have. Oh, well. I don't remember that. It is, anyway, just shortly, it is a search engine which prides itself on not gathering information on you. Google, it gathers all sort of information about you, but DuckDuckGo says, no, your privacy comes first, we will only give you search results. Yes, we did talk about the search bubble, didn't we?
I think we did that. One of the first episodes, I think.
It was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Still, probably a good episode. Go back, listen to it, and come back and tell us what it was about. Right. So this is a good thing. It is a practical thing to use.
However...
all right.
As we all know, you're not a programmer.
True.
How often do you use the PHP search?
When I'm in a web project, I tend to use PHP.net quite often, but I usually forget that I have a keyword search for it, so I go to the website instead.
Mm.
And it is useful even if you're not a programmer, because, well, as you know, people who are not programmers still has to learn how to read code and to understand how different PHP code snippets are supposed to work. You have to reference it in some way. Well,
yeah.
All right, well, I don't think... Oh, sure,
well,
go ahead.
I pointed that as an example because that's where... I've already forgotten the name. Bookmark keywords. That's where they are failing. When you have a search that you don't use that often.
When you use it sparingly, you tend to forget it's there.
Forget what abbreviation you used for it.
Oh, sure.
And then it's rendered obsolete.
IMDb I use all the time, and G, the letter G I use all the time, so those I remember, but...
Mm.
All right, I don't think we actually... Did we explain how you set a bookmark keyword?
I don't think we did, but I can do it briefly.
Sure, do that.
For example, if we go to google.com, should I spell that out? No. And
I think everyone can find their way there.
If we go to google.com, we find a nice little search bar or search field. And if you write Google in the search field and click enter, we find google.com as the first result. And if we click on that, we are back at where we began. That's how most people tend to look up google.com, according to, I don't know where, really, but that's the way most people use Google. They Google Google.
That's tragic.
Yeah, very tragic. However, if we right-click in the search field...
And that is click on the search field with your right mouse button.
Yeah, you're very down to basic here, I think, but okay.
Yeah, well.
In Firefox, at least, we find an alternative. You can give it out in English, because I have Firefox in Swedish.
Add a keyword for this search.
And then you get a little new little window where you can put a name on your bookmark. And then where you want to save it, in which folder. And last, you have... a field to type in your keyword. That is, if I want to do a Google search, I might put a G in it. I might call it Google if I have something else on G. Whatever I find convenient.
Or just Goo?
Yeah, I can call it Burp as well if I want, but... And then you have saved your bookmark keyword.
Splendid! Let's not rat hole this anymore.
Nope.
Do you have... But you have to tell us about your impressions. You didn't use it before. You tried it. You've been using it for a couple of months. Are you going to continue using it? Do you find it practical?
Yeah, nowadays it's a part of my daily habits. I use G. I use Tida. I use YouTube with my keywords. So, well, a handful, I'd say. If you have more than 5 or 6, you start to forget what the abbreviation was. What did you call it? And then it has lost its purpose. If you have 3 or 4, it's very convenient. And that's the power of it.
Sounds great.
Yep. And now we move on to look at the mail we got from one of our listeners.
Yes, we got a mail some time ago. When could this have been? It was in not quite a month ago.
No, 2 weeks.
A couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And it was from our old friend, Emil, who has sent us mails and tips before.
Yep.
He sent us a URL, and it was to a site named Code Academy. And I will try to translate what he said in his mail.
But you're a bit wrong already from the beginning.
All right.
You see, I thought as well as that it was called Code Academy. But I ended up typing the URL wrong all the times. It's called Codecademy. They don't have an A.
Ah, right. My bad. Codecademy. That's true. You're right. Codecademy.com. That's it. And when you go to Codecademy.com, it says learn to code. And in his mail, Emil says that he tried the first course and he is very impressed. It's structured, very good, and smart. It's cleverly built, so you want to keep on going in the course.
Mm-hmm.
He recommends it to everyone who wants to start programming, and that is no matter what programming language you want to learn, although they teach JavaScript. And we've mentioned this before, it doesn't really matter what kind of programming language you learn, since the thinking, the way to think is still the same in most programming languages. It's just a nomenclature, it's just the word, the abbreviations, the and so on.
Yeah.
That changes. More or less, of course, there are high-level and low-level languages. Never mind. All right. And he recommends that this should be included in a web design course to have a foundation to stand on when you get in contact with and when you encounter JavaScript.
Mm.
And you have tried this course.
I have, actually. Because I took a few courses at university during last semester, fall. And one of the courses was web programming, but I ended up not doing any of the assignments for that course because the kurslitteratur.
Course literature?
Yeah, I'm going to tyda. My friend in the dark. Course books or course literature, yeah, exactly. The course literature, eloquentjavascript.net, I think, not com. Yeah, eloquentjavascript.net, an online book for learning JavaScript. It was very thorough. I appreciated that because it was very fun to read, but it was a lot of text. And as you know, I don't read that fast. So it ended up taking a lot of time, and I lost the interest in reading, and then I didn't learn anything, and then I didn't do my assignments in time, and then the course ended. Yeah. But then we got this mail from Emil, where he mentions a quick and fun way to learn JavaScript, and I thought, oh well, I might as well try it.
Great timing.
Yeah, I must say. So I registered an account and started looking into it. I took the first, it's mainly JavaScript, as you said, that they teach, and it's separated into 5 different sections with lessons. Introduction, functions, conditionals, review, and objects. And I started with the introduction then. The first lesson was very basic. I can read it out for you. It asked me, what's your name? And then it tells me to type in my name inside quotes. So the first little task you get in the first assignment is to write your name inside quotation marks.
That sounds really hard.
Yeah, very hard. And then the next little task in the first lesson is to check the length of your name by writing your name in quotes again and adding dot length. And so it goes on, and it raises the difficulty very, very little for each task. So the first section of the course gives you a quick look into what the JavaScript syntax, what the language looks like.
All right, just let me get this straight.
Mm?
When you typed your name inside quotation marks and you add dot length,
yep.
So dot length is some sort of function in the language,
yep.
That actually returns the number of letters in your name or in whatever it is added to.
Yeah.
All right, clever.
Then the difficulty gets harder and harder. You have a quick look at variables to create, a variable. To have a variable can store a string, or it can store a number, or it can store any type of data, and you can use these variables later in functions to do math or to do other tasks. So so far, after doing this first section of the course, I can't say that I understand much of JavaScript, but I have gotten a quick look at what it looks like, how I should write things, which way I should think when I work with programming, because this is my first programming language I'm learning here. HTML and CSS isn't programming at all, actually.
True.
So this is another level of thinking when you work with something. And as I said, it was a very, very entertaining way of learning things. It builds upon what's the English word for it? Belöningsmetodik.
It's the same thing in every game, and in game like PlayStation and Xbox.
Yeah, but
you always get these little badges. Gad, what's the name? Badges.
Badges, yep. But yeah, think of Angry Birds as an example that many people know about. Simple games that are not hard at all, but they are enough entertaining for you to keep playing, and for every stage that you finish, you get a little reward in form of a badge or in form of a star or anything like that, so that you feel motivated to keep on going, even if the game isn't that hard at all. And that's more or less what they are doing here. They are scaling it down to very easy parts, and for every little part that you finish, you get a fancy badge or you get a fancy... Oh, there we have Angry Birds in the background.
Right, sorry.
Helgeron, you should say in Swedish.
Keep on going. Don't let me interrupt you.
So that's what they are doing here. They are raising the bar very little for each step, but for every little step that you take, you also get a lot of...
But still, this is JavaScript. Mm-hmm. I would argue that JavaScript is not a very good first language, since it has so many idiosyncrasies, and it is a very high-level scripting language that... Well, it's not the best if you want to learn to be a real programmer.
No.
But if you are a web designer,
yep.
And then you more or less only get in contact with JavaScript, at least as a front-end web designer. If you go to become a back-end web designer and design the basis, the foundation for the web program, then you learn PHP, of course.
Mm. Yep.
Or ASP or something like that. You can even use Python if you want, but... Mm. Most today use PHP.
Yeah.
But if you're front-end designer, which you are,
yep.
Then you have to have at least some knowledge of how JavaScript works to be able to use stuff like jQuery and such.
Yeah.
And then this is not a good idea. As Emil said in his mail, it could very well be included in a web design course just to give web designers some form of foundation. And as of now, I am leading two web design courses at my school, and I will include this.
Yeah.
They will go this course as a part of the web design basics course to at least get some sort of idea about how JavaScript works. I mean, copy and pasting simple JavaScripts is not hard, and they already do that.
Mm.
Everyone can do that, but to actually understand what it's doing, I think this is really good.
Yeah.
How long a course is it?
Well, I've only completed the first section of it.
And how many are there?
Let me take a look. Well, I've done the introduction. It's separated into five parts. Introduction, functions, conditionals, review, and objects. So I've done the introduction and started with learning about functions.
All right.
So yeah, as you said, I am a designer. That's why I became interested in web designing from the beginning. I like doing pixel graphics in Photoshop and cutting them up and aligning them and making a website look nice. I don't care that much about functionality. I have to, as a designer, of course, when I work on larger projects and the stuff have to work together with the backend, like Drupal, it has to work on different resolutions, mobile phones, etc., etc. But that also adds more fun to it, because then I get to design more, so to say. I get to design more facets of the whole project. But
of the whole UI experience, the user interface.
Yeah. But
and I mean, a great part, if you don't mind, a great part of the user experience isn't limited to design anymore. It isn't just something to look at, since we actually interact with web pages. We expect them to change to
what
things we do.
Mm,
exactly.
Yep.
And that's not only if we go from a full-fledged desktop computer to our mobile phone. We expect them to look different and to work with us in the way that we work with the web page. But also when we are there, we expect them to conform to our way of working with them.
Mm.
So the JavaScript libraries like jQuery are how you accomplish that, how you do that.
Yeah.
And even if you don't have to write the most advanced programs in JavaScript or jQuery, to still at least have the basic knowledge where you should turn to and what kind of functions are available to you as a designer,
yeah,
that is a great strength.
Mm. And just to be able to learn to read and edit the language. Because many solutions today are built with JavaScript or jQuery, which is more or less a simplified version of JavaScript. Save image sliders and I think even audio players in some extensions. Other UI effects on web pages are more or less built with JavaScript. So then I, as a designer, suddenly have to confront with programming languages. I'm not in my safe environment of HTML and CSS anymore. And even if I don't have to write it from scratch, I have to at least be able to tweak it. If I use a finished solution, I have to make it stick into my website project. And that's another aspect of it is what a web designer at a Swedish web bureau said at the seminar I was attending. Emilia Blom, she is called, by the way. She mentioned that working as a designer isn't just, well, working with your own thoughts or the other designers on the project. You have to work with the developers as well, sooner or later. If you start sketching a mock-up of the how the web page should work in different screen resolutions and such, you as a designer, of course, need to have some understanding of how a web browser works, how HTML and CSS work, how it behaves under the skin. But the developers of the page who will actually do the hard work, the code, know more than you. And the big issue here, or the big thing you need to think about already from the start, is to work tighter with the developers as a designer. And one way of doing it is to actually know about, in this case, JavaScript, even if you don't use it yourself, but already plan for it on an early stage, how you should implement things and how things should be built, so you don't work on another level of the developers.
True. And let's end this segment by thanking Emil very much for that recommendation, since it bore fruit. It was great.
Mm.
You mentioned that seminar you went to. I'm very curious to hear more about that.
Mm.
What kind of seminar was it? What did they talk about? What kind of presenters were there?
Well, the seminar was called Cap'n Design Live from the Swedish design magazine Cap'n Design.
And what kind of target audience does Cap'n Design have?
Well, the title, Cap'n Design, mostly designers. Mm.
So it's about people who likes to wear caps and design.
Yeah, you got that straight. All sorts of designers. I read their magazine, right, and it doesn't interest me at all, actually, because they target all sorts of design. It's typography design, it's art design, it's magazine design, it's artists, photographers.
So that's print design.
Print design, exactly.
Right.
Other sorts of art design. And then web designers, of course. Basically the design appeal more than the developer appeal of IT and similar stuff.
All right. So Cap'n Design Live is events they arrange where they invite speakers and they have different topics every time, I guess?
Yep.
And the topic for this one was?
The topic for this one was web, simply.
Okay, that's easy enough.
Yeah, I attended one almost a year ago now, which had the topic typography. And later on they had another topic, which was print, and now it was web. So it's the design appeal to different areas. And to web they invited four different speakers, or at least they had four talks, but some of them had more speakers. And as I said, Emilia Blom was one of the talkers from the Swedish web bureau Good Old. And she talked mostly about responsive and adaptive web design. The way web pages
adapt?
Yeah, adapt to different screen resolutions and different gadgets, mobile phones, desktop computers, laptops, tablets.
Did you know any one of these speakers beforehand? Have you heard of any one of them?
No, I don't think I had at that moment. But the speech that was most of interest for me was the one by Emilia about responsive and adaptive web design. The other speeches, the last speech I vaguely remember was more or less about advertising. He who held that speech had been working with advertising bureaus of different kinds, and he was talking about the way advertising should evolve to target a broader audience and actually make advertising interesting again. Well, he talked a lot about how people look at advertising today. It's a pain in the butt.
In the behind.
You get advertising through a mailbox, you get advertising on your television when you watch a movie, on the radio, and on and on. And you just filter that out because it isn't interesting. You get banners on websites and you filter it out with adblock anyway. So he talked much of the way to make advertising appear, make advertising a fun experience for the people who they target by doing, well, he mentioned Red Bull as an example, who make a lot of events, and by that they do advertising.
Yeah, and take for example ICA, the Swedish, what are they? Convenience store chain.
Exactly.
And they have a TV commercial that people actually go out of their way to watch.
Yeah, because it ended up being more or less a TV show. More
exactly.
Ad, so people want to continue look at it.
There is a story. Something happens to people, and it's fun. It's engaging. I know in the great US of A on the other side of the pond, they have the same thing, but specifically at the Super Bowl.
Ah, yeah.
It's some form of rugby they play over there. And when they have the great finale, they have commercial spots, and these cost a lot of money. And the fun thing is that these commercials are watched by people not even remotely interested in sports, because they are very well made, and they are made to attract a target audience that isn't the usual one, which is often very narrow, but they target everyone.
Yeah.
So it has to be engaging, it has to be fun, it has to be leave an impact in some way. So these commercials are interesting, and here in Sweden we don't have anything really comparable to that, but well, we have Melodischlagerfestivalen.
Yeah.
The music talent show that is run in all of Europe, and
Eurovision Song Contest.
Eurovision Song Contest, exactly. And it's a big deal in Sweden. It's not in the rest of Europe. There are a few countries where it's a big deal, but not many of them. It's such a great people event. Everyone watches Melodifestivalen. And of course, it's very attractive for companies to have their commercials show up in that.
Yeah, but his point was more or less that advertising should be more interactive, or at least be...
Should be interesting.
Yeah.
You should engage the people who are the target audience for the commercial.
Then he mentioned different companies who make a lot of, not commercials in that way that the commercials are only made to sell the products, but they make events.
Happenings,
carnivals, festivals. They hire musical bands and all sorts of these things, which makes people want to come to them because it's a social event.
Did he have any example of this?
Well, I mentioned Red Bull.
And Cap and Design Live must be an example of this, isn't it?
Yeah, you could say.
I mean, it is a happening. They invite good speakers, high-quality speakers, they get the designers there, and still, it's commercial, it's a newspaper, a magazine that invites you.
Yeah.
This must be the worst cup of tea I've ever had.
Yeah, you look very frowned.
It's lukewarm, and it's like, I don't know.
Tastes like smog.
No, it's tasteless water. I like my tea strong and hot. This is neither. Ugh. But I forget it between every sip, so I still keep drinking it. Oh, well. All right. Any last words on Cap and Design Live?
No.
What did you learn? What did you bring with you from that experience?
Well, I don't learn that much, actually, specific information. So I hope that my employer don't listen to this show, because he is the one who pay the fine to get to these seminars and events. But I do love them, because you get a lot of interaction with other people who work in the same, with the same things as you do.
Oh, networking!
Yeah.
Good one, right.
And also, you get a look at different angles of something. In this case, web. I wasn't the slightest interested from the beginning in what he had to say about advertising. But afterwards, I got a very interesting insight in how advertising bureaus think with their products, advertising, and how it appealed to me as a web designer. Another speech was about launching your Facebook campaigns and how you make them work for a company. And again, not anything that I'm interested in. My employer don't want me to do any Facebook ads, but I got an insight in how to work with social networking, viral marketing, similar stuff. And even if I don't
practice it right now,
yeah, exactly, I can still have that in the back of my mind when I work with other stuff.
It's a tool that is good to know. Mm. And sometimes you don't always get new knowledge. You, as you said, you get a different perspective on it.
Yeah.
And also you can get a sort of broader picture.
Yeah.
And you get something that you already know. You can get it confirmed that, yes, this is actually what they say, those who are in the know.
Yeah. Because the reason I attended was one speech about responsive web design. And I basically already knew beforehand what responsive web design was about. So everything she said, I more or less already knew.
Everything she said, I already taught you. We had some other feedback.
Mm?
From our old friend Tor. He said, let me get that up here. Right, Tor wrote to us and he told us about a Firefox extension that he uses that I didn't know of beforehand. It's called autocopy. Automatic copy something. Autocopy for short. And he says, he describes it like many times when I want to copy something, for example, to paste it into a search engine, this is very handy because you can highlight it with your mouse and right-click on it to get a menu and choose copy. All right, that's the ordinary way to go about this. But with this extension autocopy, it's enough to just highlight the text with your mouse, and it automatically ends up in your copy and paste buffer.
Clipboard.
All right, well, that might be it.
I can read out what the description of autocopy is on Mozilla add-ons page.
Go ahead.
They say, select text and it's automatically copied to the clipboard. Also paste on middle click. So that's the feature of autocopy.
And do you think this sounds like something you would be interested in using? Tor actually think it's great, but yeah. How about you?
No, I don't think, because I don't end up that much actually copying and pasting things from the web.
Okay.
Very rarely, actually.
I have to disagree with that.
Give me an example of when I... because I can't think of any.
I do a lot of copy and pasting.
Okay. When you do your essays at university?
Thank you. No, not that. I do a lot of copy and paste when I handle social media, when I talk on IM, on IRC. One thing I copy and paste a lot, which you know, are URLs. I find some interesting article or gadget on the web,
yeah,
and I copy it to IM to send to you or to IRC or to Twitter or Identica or even Google Plus, whatever. So that is one example when I use a lot of copy and pasting. But I don't need this extension since I don't run Windows.
Ah.
And in Linux and Unix, this has been the standard for...
Didn't we talk
many years
last time about fsconce?
We did.
Well, then say GNU Linux. Didn't you learn a thing?
All right. I beg your pardon. GNU Linux and in Unix, this has been a standard since long before Microsoft and Windows.
Mm.
And I don't know how it is in the Mac world, but I believe they've had something similar. That is, if you highlight something with your mouse, with your cursor, you can then it automatically ends up in the clipboard and you can paste it in anywhere you like with a middle click. This is the default behavior. And then it's quite nice since you can also use Control C, Control V, that is copy and
Paste.
why is Control V paste?
It was the only thing that was available, and it's
Close enough to see. I
too far to go to up to P because then you
might be.
print.
Never thought about that. Never mind. All right. So in Linux you have GNU Linux, pardon. You have a second clipboard where you can save your copied material. So if I want to copy and paste something very quickly, I just highlight it, middle click. Or if I want to juggle something else in the clipboard, I can Control C it and highlight something else. Then I have two things I can paste either with a middle click or a Control V. Very handy. So in Linux, this isn't something that's really useful. It does this by default in all programs and applications. But if you like that behavior, there is an extension, autocopy, for Firefox to mimic this behavior.
There's an app for that.
All right, it's
So.
applicable in this case. I still don't like that phrase. All right, great. We will link to that in our show notes, and we will put a link into, well, what else did we talk about? Yes, what was it?
Codecademy.
Codecademy. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, and we will put a link to
Cap'n Design, and we will put a
design,
link
right?
to Google, and we will put a link to
Is that really necessary?
I think so, yes.
All right, and to Firefox and Chrome, and well, all right, let's wrap this episode up, shall we? Shall we mention what our theme music was?
Yeah, we could. The theme music was from the very well-known and very well-used Kevin MacLeod. How is that pronounced?
I believe it's pronounced MacLeod, like the man in Highlander, MacLeod.
MacLeod. Yeah.
I don't know if he's Scottish. I think he's from USA. Oh, well, doesn't matter.
And the track
I
was
might be wrong.
called Pixel Peaker Polka.
Isn't that a wonderful name? Try to
Yes.
say that quickly through 5 times in a row.
Pixel Peaker Polka.
You see, it's wonderful. It's a great title for a song. Kevin MacLeod. Yes, it was nice. It was peppy. And you will, as always, hear it at the end of the podcast in its entirety. I believe it is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 license, and you can find it at freemusicarchive.org, and we will link to that as well, of course. Please do as Tor and Emil has done, get in contact with us, tell us what you think and what you like. You can mail us, send us an email, show@aiit.se, or talk to us on Twitter, Identica, at Alltinomit, Altinomite, or at Warpfuzz, or at Sonnergard, or at our webpage, aiit.se/radio, or at wherever. Did I miss something out?
No, basically mail, Twitter, Google Plus, and Identica.
Right, Google Plus, I didn't mention the URL there. We have set up a short URL to get to our Google Plus page, since those URLs are quite hard to get. So it's aiit.se/radio/ and the plus sign. You don't write out PLUS, you just enter the plus after our ordinary URL and you will enter our Google Plus page. It's readable by everyone, but you have to have a Google account to be able to post there. Anything else you want to plug?
No, you were featured in a recent episode of a Radio Gamer, we could perhaps say. It's Swedish podcast, however, but.
Yeah, exactly. I phoned into a Swedish podcast called Radio Gamer. Not much to listen to, perhaps, but
But you still do it.
I still did it. I thought it was a fun thing to do. We don't take live calls during our recordings, but that might change as soon as I figure out some simple way to do it. Perhaps we could use Mumble to get people to call in and be featured on our podcast. It would be nice.
Sounds like an idea.
Sounds like an idea. Right, so when I go out and make myself another cup of tea, you will get to listen to Pixel Peaker Polka another time around. And have a good time, everyone. We'll hear each other again.
See you out there. Call it Google if I have something else on G, whatever I find convenient.
Or just Goo?
Yeah, I can call it Burp as well if I want, but...
A Goo?
Now you are doing references on a whole out of scale here.
Alright, I'll cut that. Continue, please.
I was finished.
Oh, alright.
And then you click Enter. And then it tells me to type in my name inside quotes. Quote, what are they called? They are called something. They're called
quotation marks?
Quotation marks, thank you. So they, assignment, yeah. The first little, I'm losing all
assignment.
The words. Ja, men, nej.
Uppgift?
The first task. The first section of the course. Really just make you have a look in at what it has you hit for every little step that you take you also get a lot of encouragement.
Every step you take
I'm not watching you.
Every move you make. No, you're not watching me. All right.
Who made
still
that?
Pardon?
Who made that song?
Oh, I don't know. Was it Police or something like that?
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Might be. Oh, never mind.
And on and on. And Ica Crunchy is very good. Also, we have a bit of a smygreklam här. You get television on the radio. I don't learn that much, which actually... and I do hope that... stand by technical difficulties. Let's take that again. So everything she said, I more or less already knew.
Everything she said, oh, I already taught you.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Pardon?
Well, she said that in a speech.
All right.
You can cut that out. Moving on. I must say, I love our listeners.
All right, how come?
Don't you?
Well, of course. There wouldn't be any idea to do this if we didn't have them.
I just was just thinking about how we always derail in our topics.
Oh, quite. Yes, topic exactly.
Topic for today was bookmark keywords, and then we ended up talking... no, we actually did move on to the next topic, which was the JavaScript course. And
true.
Then we derailed into MyCap and Design Live, which was nice, and then we derailed again out in the outer space.
Let's look into that, and in the meantime,
Kenneth is trying to say here is that until next episode, you could think about what you would like to ask us if you were to phone into us live.
Exactly.
So please
that.
Do that. And if you...
I had another sip of that tea. It's really... Ugh. I still put it over here so I don't tend to
see it.
So I won't see it exactly.
See you out there.
En gång till med lite mer feeling, tack.
See you out there.
Great.